All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to the latest episode of the Euro Snob Podcast. As you can tell by the sound of my voice, I'm not Ian Smith hosting today. My name is Alex John, usually just the co-host, but Ian unfortunately unable to join us tonight. But I do have a good friend, and as Ian refers to him, the media assassin Billy O. Billy, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well, AJ. How are you doing, my friend? And it's always good to come back from the holiday. I hope yours was well.
Absolutely. Yeah. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was very good. Usually fantasy football in terms of American football never goes too well, but it actually benefited in my favor with some players I had, so that was nice. We'll get to what kind of weekend Arsenal had that weekend as well, which was very nice. So it was good.
Yeah, it's as you mentioned, it's been a really good stretch for Arsenal within the past 2 weeks. And just getting right into it, because we haven't been able to talk since before the Tottenham game, actually. And a lot's happened since then in the Arsenal world. And probably the most notable of which was the 2-0 victory against Tottenham. And it was a victory that seems to have rejuvenated the fan base. It was a victory where the entire team played well. There really wasn't a weak point in the performance. And it was a game that we really dominated from beginning to end. And, obviously we'll get into the X's and O's of it to some extent, but just what were your initial takeaways from that game and your reaction from what you saw during the game and then kind of how you felt after the game?
I mean, I going into the game, I didn't know exactly when, but I mean, we talked about this, and I'm trying to like look at exactly when it happened, but I know that we had like talked about this in terms of where we thought they were going to finish. Like, I know I pegged them to finish seventh, which, by the way, they're currently in, but going into that game, I'm always kind of confident going into that game. And I knew that Arsenal had to be able to, turn it around to a degree to be able to, I don't know, get something out of the game. And they did. I felt that the Champions League was always going to catch up with Tottenham. It did a little bit later than I thought that it was going to. But with this run of games coming up in December, because there's a lot of games coming up, I don't know how they're going to fare. It's going to be a very interesting task to see how they do, where I feel Arsenal is a little bit more trained for it, being playing a B team, quote unquote, on a Thursday and then playing again on the weekend and vice versa with two different setups and interchanging and whatnot. So, I just think it's going to be difficult for them and not better for Arsenal, but they might be more seasoned for it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point with the squad depth, especially. And I think that's something we've talked about before, that Tottenham don't necessarily have the squad depth that Arsenal has. I think Tottenham, you could argue, in the starting 11 have just as many good players as Arsenal do. And as many pundits and experts said before the game, a combined Arsenal-Tottenham starting 11 would have more Tottenham players. We'll see how they feel about that. And that's actually something I'd like to get into later, kind of the media reaction.
Oh,
But
yes.
there's definitely some stuff to be talked about there. But, just looking at the game, it was when I saw the lineups, I was a little bit concerned just about the midfield because, Tottenham do have the ability to press and turn us over in midfield. And but I think they started Sissoko in that game. It was rather than Harry Winks. And I think that kind of played into our favor to some extent. Christian Eriksen was pretty invisible. We kept Dele Alli almost, completely invisible on the pitch. And then in terms of their wingbacks, they really weren't able to get forward. We really kind of pushed them back with Kolasinac and Bellerin getting forward. And then the front three, I just thought, did an amazing job of interchanging positions. I thought Lacazette's movement especially was really causing Tottenham all sorts of issues. And
Oh,
then
yeah, no doubt.
Alexis and Ozil, I mean, were incredible as well. I mean, Ozil, I think that's one of his best big game performances in an Arsenal shirt that I've seen. And what would you kind of take away from Ozil's performance? Because he's really the one who kind of walked away from that game with a lot of the plaudits. It was him and Mustafi were kind of the two standout players for me, but who kind of stood out for you, and what'd you think about Ozil?
I concur definitely 100% with the sentiments on Lacazette, first of all, about what you said. I think that you're spot on. His movement really caused a lot of stuff going on. That front three get goals out of the game, like guaranteed. You know, in that Everton game, I mean, they let up two, but they scored five. You know, so I thought Ozil in this game started to show the form that he was about to get into in this next run of games, even though he was out that one game with quote unquote illness, whatever, you know, that is, you know, rest, whatever, that's fine. You know, I thought that they were integral to the lineup. Sanchez, I don't know where he's at. Like, you don't know if you believe the rumor that he's not mentally there and that's why he's not given 100% and looks that way. Maybe he's fatigued. Maybe football is a little, you know, despondent to him because it isn't making the World Cup. You know what I mean? So there's nothing to kind of like look forward to. Like, you don't know, because he's a very emotional guy. So you don't know like what he's like getting into. So like, I thought he played well, gets the goal. He always does. But like, I mean, I thought in that game, Arsenal looked so dominant with that front three that they probably could have scored what, like four or five? I mean, it could have been a lot.
Yeah, I think there were definitely some chances for this to have been a lot uglier. And other than one save, really, I don't think Petr Cech was that busy for most of the game. You know, I figured that Tottenham would be able to create a little bit just with the creative attacking players that they have. But even when they subbed on Heung-Min Son and Harry Winks, they really weren't creating too much. They didn't gain a foothold in midfield. I thought the Xhaka-Ramsey pairing had one of its better games. In terms of being able to pick and choose when they went forward. And, you know, in the moments that Xhaka pressed forward, Ramsey pulled back and vice versa. There was never a position where both of them were caught too high up the pitch and then we were left exposed on the counter. But I think also having Mustafi back was a huge, huge bonus, because not only does he give you your best ball playing center back, but he's got recovery pace. And Honestly, he looked as good as he's looked in an Arsenal uniform, which was really encouraging to see in the middle of a front three rather than playing on the right side of a front three, which we've seen before, you know, where Koscielny would play in the middle. So I think that was a huge, huge bonus for Arsenal in that game. And I don't know if you had this feeling, but during the game, I almost wondered, this is too easy. You know, when we went up 2-0, I kept thinking, all right, well, you know, Tottenham's going to come back. They're probably going to get a goal and then, you know, make this a really nervy finish. But it never really got to that point. Were you kind of surprised at the lack of, I don't want to say lack of fight, but maybe lack of a resurgence that we got from Spurs in that game?
You know, a lot of Arsenal fans won't admit it, but you get a little apprehension about refereeing calls in a football match. You know, even the people that say, oh, these refereeing percentages don't count because it's in big games and Arsenal don't win big games. That's like accurate. You know what I mean? I'm talking about like other things, you know, the constant repetition of bad refereeing. So that was what I was worried about. But when in the beginning of the game, I kind of saw Arsenal putting the pressure on, so to speak, little Tottenham jab.
I got you there.
But literally doing that, I think kind of showed where they were going to be at for the game. And I don't think Tottenham were ready for it. I think it was almost kind of like a reverse psychology. Like Tottenham almost kind of came into the game thinking they were going to get, you know, something out of it and got caught out, where Arsenal have definitely done that to Tottenham once or twice. Begrudgingly. So, you know, I felt that they, you know, just looked right from the beginning to be strong. And at no point when the refereeing calls weren't getting in the way because they got that goal, did I think, man, you know what, this isn't going to go our way. I kind of felt confident. The Mustafi goal was really good, really strong, borderline offside. But when it went our way, I was like, all right, they look good. They got the goal. It was strong. It was a guy just coming back. I was pumped. Everybody was pumped for him. They all celebrated with him. It was nice.
Yeah. And I mean, first of all, after the offside that was given against Lacazette and then the lack of offside in other games Arsenal suffered from, I really feel no sympathy for any Tottenham fan that was claiming offside. You know, by the letter of the law, maybe it was, but, you know, I think we were due for some of those breaks, especially because the other big teams seemed to get those. But
of course,
you know, going back to Ozil, just because I've kind of thinking through the game as it went along. I mean, really from the first minute, he was the one who took control. He, you know, he dropped a lot deeper to receive the ball. He drove forward. He tracked back defensively, helped create chaos in the attacking third. It seemed like he really took to heart all the talk about Christian Eriksen being better than him and all that sort of nonsense. And I think a motivated Mesut Ozil is just on another level to most number 10s in the world. You know, certainly in the Premier League, other than Kevin De Bruyne, you could argue. But I think a lot of that talk, you know, especially because Eriksen had scored those goals against Northern Ireland, I think, to qualify for the World Cup. And
right.
And everyone was talking about, oh, you know, Eriksen surpassed Ozil. I think Ozil took that game to kind of be like, all right, just check me out. This is why I've been German Player of the Year for the past 3-4 years, something like that.
Yeah, and won the World Cup, by the way. So, you know, what's that?
Yeah, exactly. Just no big deal there. But, you know, even the second goal, like we talked about earlier, but Lacazette's movement to kind of run the channels, make that run from wide to create the space for Alexis to come in. Mm-hmm. You know, Tottenham really didn't know how to handle that all game.
No, I mean, they didn't look like they were in the mood to even be bothered with trying to how to figure it out. They just looked like they were so intimidated by it that they figured that if they kind of held back a little bit, that it would kind of like stop coming on. But the only unfortunate thing is that it started at what, the 30, Mustafi's goal was the 36th minute. So if it would have started a little earlier, I think the damage, if halftime didn't come so soon, would have been pretty relentless. It would have been one of those like legendary, like 4-0, 5-0 battering games that everybody would remember and talk about. But it happened right at the stroke of halftime almost. And then, you know, they came out and I was glad that they didn't concede a goal. I have here that Cech had 4 saves, because I know we talked about that. So 4 saves, I mean, that's a pretty good control of the ball, like you were mentioning before, and overall control of the game.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Once we got the 2-0 lead, we really were able to kind of control things defensively. I mean, there were really no clear-cut chances. You know, at no point did I feel threatened, which was kind of different than how it usually has been in games like that. And, you know, I think just all the talk about a power shift, and I think we can get into that right now, actually, just to talk about a power shift. I mean, how much do you think that played in the players' minds? Because in my opinion, you know, I saw all these articles that came out before the game, like we mentioned, about the combined 11s and how I saw one guy from the Mirror said, even if Arsenal win, you know, the power shift is complete or something to that effect. And I just think if you poke and prod a sleeping giant, eventually they're going to wake up and they're going to fight back. And I think that's kind of what happened in this game, that the whole team came in eager to prove a point. Now, I will say, you know, obviously it's something that we need to see on a more consistent basis in these type of games, but it was an encouraging performance in that respect. But I mean, certainly the media narrative had, you know, before and after the game was interesting to analyze. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on that.
I mean, you know my opinions on the media. That I was actually, when that was happening, I was up early. You know, I have a little newborn, and my wife was up kind of early taking care of her, came back in to go to bed, and I kind of like was up. So I was looking on my phone, and this was like prime time Twitter for when this was popping off over there. So I was on there, and I'm like, you know, going nuts about this like combined 11, and it's, you know, Tottenham only, and this is why I picked Tottenham only, and all this boo-hoo about, you know, getting a tweet of them drinking tea and all this stuff. I'm like, you know, come on. Like, if you're going to know what kind of narrative – is it this? Are they this naive that they don't think the narrative they're writing is real? Like, do they truly believe this stuff, or do they know what they're doing, and this is why they're doing it, so they get this much attention? You know, I don't know what the reasoning is behind it, because there has to be a reason. But to just keep on knocking them down, it has to eventually get beyond maybe even tactics to a point. And it's just do your kind of job type of thing. Get it out there. Prove what you're worth. I mean, you may be right about Ozil, man. I mean, he looks on fire since then. Like, I mean, he came out – like crazy and went and has been having good games in the games that he's been playing. So.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't know. It's one of those things where you wonder what the media sees in Spurs that makes them such a darling.
That's the question that I was going to ask you actually right before too. Like why them? Like what, how is there a power shift when they haven't even won an FA Cup in the last 10 years? If they keep saying Arsenal 10 years, like that 10 year Arsenal thing keeps moving back and back. Like,
well, it's just funny because the media narrative, and I know I use that word a lot, the narrative, but it keeps getting rewritten or it keeps getting changed in the sense that, you know, first, oh, Arsenal haven't won a trophy in X amount of years. Now they won the FA Cup, but the FA Cup's not a real trophy. Or, you know, why aren't they going further than Champions League? Okay, well, what trophy has Spurs won recently? What exactly have they accomplished? And then, you know, Pochettino came out and said, oh, we're not interested in the FA Cup. We're trying to get real trophies. And, well, I don't know how that's working out for you. I mean, you know, they're making a little bit of a run in the Champions League, and I'll certainly give them credit, but you know, I feel pretty secure in saying they're not going to win the Champions League and they're out of contention in the Premier League. So at some point, this media love-in with Pochettino and Tottenham, you think it comes to an end. And I have a theory as to why that is. I think it's because they have lots of English players and English media is just so desperate to see a team with lots of English players do well. Mm. So you have your Dele Alli and Harry Kane and Dyer and you know, Danny Rose and all the, you know, all those types of players. And I think the English media is just so desperate to latch onto that. Maybe that plays a factor. I mean, am I being paranoid there?
No, I mean, at some point, you know, you could think it's paranoia, maybe early on stages, but there has been such a repetition of this that it's not paranoia. There's something concrete to it. And maybe it is the English bias. You know, it could be very well that. I'm not necessarily sure why or to what degree. I really kind of don't understand it because so many other clubs have had so many other worse things go on and other things go on. And I remember when Arsenal played in New York in 2014, I went to see them at Red Bull Arena and I met this guy who is from London and he said that the reason Arsenal is so hated in his opinion is because they do things the right way. You know, they have these charitable organizations, all this other stuff, blah, blah, blah. Like you never really read anything about anything going on with them that's too crazy or ridiculous and this and that. And just the way they go about things and how they try to play football, people just don't like it. I don't know. There's just been this moniker over them, and he doesn't understand it himself. So I don't think there's a paranoia. It seems like it's been something that's been there for a while.
I mean, and isn't it funny that, you know, that you're almost punished for doing things the right way? Doesn't that seem just crazy to you?
It's crazy, but I've noticed in life that it seems to be that's what happens. I don't know why, but there's always some hit that you take, but eventually I guess if you do it, it pays off because I mean, look at what it did for him back when it was going well. It just something got lost along the way with Wenger. And, you know, I think now more the guys play for themselves and, you know, I don't know if Wenger's been doing some different things here or there, but they seem to be in a good, you know, vein of form. So I'm hoping that they can continue that.
Yeah, and you know, kind of going off of that vein of form, you know, we did have the Europa League game against Cologne. It was at Cologne. You know, it's really not a game we're going to get into too much. I mean, I think there's just a couple takeaways. I think Cologne got a very generous penalty decision, but you know, overall on the balance of play, you know, we weren't particularly good. Having said that, we came out of that game still topping our group and not really risking any of our first team regulars. So, you know, can you really be too upset? I mean, yeah, keep in mind who you're playing in key positions in these games. You know, you had Debushi was out there. Maitland-Niles, Elneny, Coquelin, you know, one of the more dysfunctional midfields that's ever been created. I mean, are you even really that upset about that result, given that we topped the group, or did you see anything kind of negative about it at all?
I saw absolutely nothing negative about it whatsoever. And this might cause some sort of stir. You could bring it at my Twitter handle that AJ will mention at the end of the show, and we can talk about it. Because you have to understand, they either know or Wenger definitely told them, hey guys, going into this game, don't go too crazy or get yourself hurt, because if we lose, you're going to still top the group or maybe come close to it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm telling you, he's going in there before the game and saying, like, don't go too wild. You know what I mean? Control the game. The object was obviously for them to try to score, because they looked really, really bad. And the penalty decision was highly questionable. Highly questionable, again, going into the bad refereeing aspect. But beyond that, I mean, I thought it should have been a draw. And I think that's what that they were trying to go for, to be honest.
Yeah, so, it's a tough away game. I mean, you're playing – granted, you know, Cologne hasn't been doing well in the Bundesliga.
Oh, they're trash. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that the game isn't – they're not going to go crazy for a Europa League game. They're going to go nuts.
Exactly, because it's one of the few things they have to play for at this point, you know.
Right, right.
And you're playing with the second – I mean – to use an American term, you're playing with the second string team, basically.
Right, right. And like I said, they're going into that trying not to get hurt. You know, like, I mean, you would hope that Debuchy was trying to prove his worth. I mean, that one game he came back in, I think it was last year, he looked really good and he got hurt immediately in that game. I know we've talked about that before, I think. And, like, you know, like, I don't know if he was really trying to in that game. It really wasn't working. But again, I wasn't expecting so much. And then when we ended up topping the group, I was like, it didn't even really bother me when we lost. Like, I was like, I kind of was upset that I watched what I watched, but I mean, and the refereeing got me upset. But other than that,
I think it could just be that I was in a food coma at that point, because it was on Thanksgiving Day. So
Dude, that's actually true. I totally forgot it was on that day. What was I doing? I did have some craft beverages on that day with the turkey dinner. So that is right. So that was putting me out.
Yeah, so I guess maybe that's why I was not fazed by it all. But the good thing is that means you go into that last game of the group stage. You don't need anything, so you can literally put out the youth team if you want to, or whoever you want. I mean, you put out right. The same squad. And the good thing about the group, you know, winning the group, is that you're not likely to play one of the better teams that's dropping down. I don't know exactly how it works, but I'm pretty sure you don't play one of the good teams that's dropping down, and you don't play a group winner from Europa. So you're still playing a pretty reasonable draw, where you can play pretty much this second, you know, this second string team for all intents and purposes. But after that game, you know, we had a quick turnaround from Thursday to Sunday to play Burnley. And I don't know about you, but I was kind of scared about this one, just because Burnley's been so good at home, high up in the table. Did you have any reservations about that game going back into the Premier League? You know, the ability to rebound quickly, even though, you know, we rested most of our key players, you know, just to go from the emotional high of the Tottenham win to then go to a really difficult place to play Burnley.
I was very nervous about the Burnley game. And the funny part was, is I thought back to, like, I don't know, it might've been 2008 or 2009, when I remember watching an FA Cup game on stupid Fox Soccer early Saturday morning, and it was Arsenal and Burnley from, I don't even know if they were second tier championship at that point, but they made it in the later stages. And Eduardo had this crazy outside foot goal from Alex Song from, like, across the 18. It was nuts. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
And Carlos,
Carlos Vela scored a goal. So, like, I was like thinking, man, why am I so nervous about this team? But they looked compact. They looked like they all knew what they needed to do. You know, they weren't, like, overly skilled, but they were very, very good with the ball. I was nervous, because I was like, it's one of those teams like Leicester. You don't know how long they'll stick around for, because there always seems to be one every year anymore. You know, like, Watford is kind of there in a way, and now you have Burnley. But I felt that Arsenal kind of was doing their job for a lot of the game. Alexis again kind of had a performance that was like, you know, what are you kind of doing? Little moments of madness, little moments of brilliance. I felt that Arsenal were hard done by without getting the first penalty for sure. And, you know, I think that they got their just desserts with the second one, whether they think it was a push or not. His hands were on the back of him. I get Dyche's argument that, you know, was he going to be able to get the ball? That's a fair, you know, side argument, but he even agreed. And the media tried to make a big deal out of this as well. They kept trying to bait, you know, the Burnley coach. They were like, hey, you know, you're trying to, you know, what do you think of Ramsey diving? And he was like, no, he's like, it was contact and this and that. He's like, my question is, what do you got the ball? So like he went to a good soccer perspective side of it. So he was being fair.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was happy to see us come away with the win because I thought it was actually deserved, but Burnley did play very well in my opinion, but there was a true penalty before that wasn't called. So,
yeah, and for those who don't know what we're talking about, Bellerin got taken down in the box, and initially on first glance it looked like maybe the defender had gotten the ball, but once you actually saw it, he missed the ball completely, mm-hmm. and then his leg came up high and caught Bellerin, and then there was still no penalty given. And realistically, if you go up 1-0 at that point, Burnley's got to push people forward, and you can probably get an opportunity to nick a second goal. In terms of the Ramsey penalty, I mean, you put your hands on a guy's back and you shove him, you're taking that chance. And I think, you know, most reasonable people have said, look, that was, I mean, except for the people on ESPN FC, but that's a different story. Most reasonable people have said, look, yeah, that's usually a penalty in most circumstances. First half of the game was pretty boring, to be quite honest with you. I mean, not a whole lot was being created. Burnley did have a shot go off the post or the crossbar, I don't remember. But other than that, you know, I mean, they're a very well-disciplined team defensively, I will say that. They don't have any elite players on their team. It's really a team effort for them to shut teams down defensively. And we definitely struggled without Ozil. You know, your favorite player, it will be, stepped in to fill that gap. And then, you know, going into the second half, we started to create more, but still nothing really clear cut other than the first penalty shout and then the eventual second penalty. And I got to admit, when Alexis stepped up to take the second penalty, I mean, the first penalty, sorry, I was a little nervous about that just because his penalty taking doesn't always have tons of authority with it. He doesn't really smash it past the keeper, and I think he's a little predictable in the direction he goes, but he got it in there, and honestly, I think it's a huge, it's just as big a win as beating Tottenham because you went to a difficult ground that other big teams had dropped points at. You got a win. You showed some guts. It wasn't the cleanest performance, but realistically, when you're trying to get top four, points matter, style doesn't.
Well, of course, and you're trying to get those points, and they're more vital against teams around you to gain separation. So when you're playing teams like Tottenham and Burnley, where they're currently sitting around you and some above you, you want to gain separation. And I mean, Arsenal have definitely done that with those two teams, you know, especially with Tottenham because of what they've been doing. I just like bringing that up as much as possible.
Of course, like, as you should.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing for me with that game is, you know, Burnley, it was so frustrating because Burnley would do anything they could to kick the ball out of an Arsenal player's hands, feet. And as soon as an Arsenal player would just somewhat touch a Burnley player, they'd be going down looking for the foul. It was just so hypocritical. Like, I didn't understand what that game plan was. And as for the Iwobi play, we desperately missed Mesut Ozil in this form that he's in because I think he would have put this game completely out of the way at some point in the second half. But as soon as Iwobi went off in the 67th minute and Jack Wilshere came on, I'm not trying to be a Jack Wilshere fanboy. I'm not trying to say he had this amazing performance, but the team got better.
No, I think that's a great point.
I think the team, they showed a little bit more strength, a little bit more grit and movement, because I don't know what it is with the Wobey. Like, I don't know if for the national team he feels more freedom and plays a little more forward and like, I don't know, or feels more pressure to do better, and that's better for him. I don't know, because he seems to stand around a lot when he plays for the Arsenal. Like, and I'm not just kind of saying that as like some sort of just dumb like viewpoint. Like, if you watch him, he passes and he kind of has an opportunity to like make a move in the final third, and he like doesn't make it. Or if he makes it, he fluffs the shot. Like last game and the game before, I will admit, and I did admit on Twitter, that he was kind of good for the game because he held up ball possession and he had some good strong shots. But he's great from 18 to 18 when he has the ball and he's marauding forward. He's good at maintaining the possession, holding off defenders, going forward and making a good pass, even putting a guy in. But it seems in the final third, he's unfinished for the Arsenal. And defending-wise, I think he's just as good as Alexis, so to speak, you know, in terms of like what he does. But I thought the game totally turned when he came off. And I'm not trying to be like rude to him, but it when Wilshere came on, it got a little bit more open and Arsenal had some more chances that I think led up to those two penalties. So.
One penalty.
Well,
it should have been two. I think the Wilshere introduction was definitely interesting because he looked to get on the ball and then he played a lot of one touch passes. He was moving the ball quickly. He was getting into good positions. And like you said, he's good at retaining possession. He's strong on the ball. He's a good dribbler. But then that last decision seem to never come off for him. I don't know if it's just a lack of confidence when he's with Arsenal versus when he's with Nigeria. He just looks a different player. And, you know, the problem for him is he's only going to get so many opportunities with when Ozil's fit, assuming we have Ozil through January. You know, he's not going to necessarily get tons of opportunities to play in that spot. So when he gets that opportunity, he's really got to take advantage of it. And to be frank, he didn't do that. And so I think, you know, it's going to be tough for him moving forward unless he can take advantage of these opportunities. So, you know, but going back to Jack, I mean, I think it's a big asset to have him coming off the bench in these kinds of games to provide some more midfield control, creativity. He obviously is not going to have the explosiveness that he used to have. That's just, it's clear in the way he runs. It's clear in the way he plays, but he can still be an asset in these types of games, especially when he's playing in the first 11 with those players around him rather than, you know, playing with Giroud and Walcott and those guys in the second 11 or the Europa 11, as we can probably call it. So, you know, that was one thing, you know, that I certainly noticed. You mentioned that the tactics by Burnley, and that's kind of something that drew my attention too. And I got into some interesting Twitter debates after the game, which is usually your territory, but this time it was me getting into arguments with Burnley fans. And there was one situation where, well, not one situation, you know, I brought up the fact that the Burnley players seem to be going down so easily at the first sign of contact, and their fans were acting like Stoke fans. You know, they were more than okay when their players were trying to rugby tackle ours, but then God forbid anyone touched one of their players, they were booing and saying same old Arsenal, always cheating. Ashley Barnes on Burnley must have gone down at least 10 times with no contact, just standing near Mustafi. He would go down and try to gain those free kicks. So I really felt no sympathy for them, you know, when we got that penalty. And, you know, I know they feel hard done by because we've had these 90th minute winners against them, but all things considered, I really felt no sympathy and I was kind of disappointed in their tactics from that perspective, just the diving and the embellishment of contact. So it's almost karmic that it came back to bite them in the ass in the end, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I'm 100% glad we came out of there with 3 points. I was so glad. I was nervous like you about the Alexis penalty. I don't know if I said that, but I was nervous about it. But once it went in, I was so pumped to get the 3 points there. I didn't realize that the last three times we've played them, we've scored a 90th minute goal. Arsenal have, so I think that's kind of wild. But I think it's, you know, great, especially now because they're doing pretty well this year. And I think this is a huge 3 points to pick up, just because they were around us as well to create that separation. So, you know, two big hurdles, another one coming up, you know, so.
Yeah, and then, you know, we're moving on to today's game. We're recording this on Wednesday, and today's game against Huddersfield, you know, it was one of those games I didn't get to watch live. I had to come back from work and watch it in the evening. But early Lacazette goal, which I thought was going to set us up to kind of run away with it, to be quite honest with you, didn't quite work out like that. The first half is one of the poorest first halves I've seen from us in a long time. Everyone was misplacing passes. I mean, Alexis was all over the place. Xhaka lost his concentration on numerous occasions where he either got caught in possession or didn't pass hard enough to get to where it needed to go. Bellerin was out of position and misplacing passes. And, you know, really no one was doing anything. And then you had Lacazette get hurt. He had to come off at halftime. From what we've been reading, it sounds like a groin injury that could have him out for a few weeks, which is, of course, awful timing. So, you know, going in the second half, it really looked like one of those games we might slip up and drop some points. But then a certain German playmaker stood up and said, nope, not today. We're not dropping these points today. Mesut Ozil had an incredible second half, especially, you know, from the 60th minute onwards, where he contributed two goals and an assist. Really, really big performance from him, and it kind of sparked everyone around him. And once he got that second goal, I felt a lot more confident because I just didn't think that Huddersfield had the offensive firepower to really fight back and provide any sort of threat.
Yeah, the first half was very dire. I did think when they scored that early, I was really pumped because you're taking really a lot of things out of the game. You're not necessarily taking bad refereeing out of the game, but you're putting the game at least somewhat in your control, obviously, by scoring that early goal. So I was really happy for that. But the rest of the 40 minutes was not that good. A lot of misplaced passes, as you mentioned. I was going to allude to that as well. The second half, the moment of brilliance from the 68th minute to the 72nd minute when there was three goals. Both times Ozil setting up Giroud and Sanchez. The commentator on the Sanchez goal said that he was trying to hit Giroud diving and then Sanchez just took advantage of it. I don't think that that was true. I think when you look at Ozil's head, I think he saw Sanchez and I think Giroud just kind of almost had a good chance to bullet header in. And I think Sanchez did a great job not letting that distract him, because when he hit that, I thought that was going over the bar into the perfect part of the net, in the top part of that center part of the back of the net. So it was great. And then when Ozil got his goal, I thought it was just desserts on getting two assists like the previous, 3 minutes before that. So that was nice to see. And then big Ollie G got the fifth near the end of the game. So I like 5-0 games. I feel that's a nice round number. And I was telling my wife this, like, it just seems like at times when they can score a bunch of goals and really help out their goal differential, which is, I think, an important thing in this league, they'd never do it. So I was glad to see them really not care about scoring this many goals and kind of just having fun and playing ball and piling it on and taking their chances when they came in that little burst of time.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the goal differential, because right now our goal differential is 12, a plus 12. Liverpool's is a plus 10.
Yeah.
Spurs is a plus 10, and Chelsea's is a plus 14. So, you know, those five goals really helped us today in terms of moving up in that respect. And you can't understate that. That could matter, you know, when things get tight towards the end of the season. So. It was a good win. It's a little bit of a trap game because it's right between a tough away game at Burnley and then a big home match against Manchester United. The one negative to come out of today was obviously Lacazette's injury. Just with the way the front three's been clicking and given his goal, that's a really big blow. And it if he's out for a few weeks, like we think he will be, because it's a growing injury, it's a problem, because we got a very crowded fixture list coming up. You know, we've got United, and then I'd have to look at the schedule actually.
Let me see here. We have United, and then the Europa League game on the 7th. Then the 10th is Southampton away. The 13th is West Ham away. The 16th is home versus Newcastle. The 19th, home versus West Ham. So we play – that's the League Cup, excuse me, that game. But still, then the 22nd is Liverpool. The 28th is Crystal Palace. And the 31st is West Brom. And then don't forget, you play a game on the 3rd, which is Chelsea. So
– yeah, so that, I mean, that's a ton of difficult games and a really cramped time. And so not having Lacazette's a big issue. And – you know, it kind of brings me to, you know, starting to preview the weekend's game against Manchester United. Do you go with Giroud or do you go with Welbeck? I mean, personally, I think you go with Welbeck because of the mobility he gives you. I think, you know, he can replicate a little bit of what Lacazette brings you in terms of being able to run the channels and creating space for other players. My concern is that, you know, we saw Wenger substitute, you know, when Lacazette got hurt, we saw him substitute Giroud on rather than Welbeck. I wonder if he's going to play Giroud, and I think that just makes us so static against a Mourinho team that is inevitably going to park the bus, because that's what he does in big, you know, big away games for his team. So, you know, which way would you kind of lean with that?
I mean, I personally think he's, you know, I can see him definitely playing Giroud and kind of denying what I think he would normally do. But I think he would, like, play Welbeck, because I think he feels that Welbeck does well against Man United and scores goals. And I think Wenger even admitted that in a post-match interview after he played, when he scored his second time against them. I don't know. Was that last year?
Yeah, that was last season.
So I remember watching that and hearing him say that. So I that would be my only little kind of premonition on why he would play Welbeck, is because I think he thinks that he has this little knack where he could score goals against his former team. But can totally see Giroud starting as well instead. I'd like to see him start both and kind of totally throw off Jose on some sort of crazy thing by throwing out this, I don't know, different formation or something, like a 4-4-2 or just something just nuts that'll just, you know, and then totally batter them, because I don't know, nothing would be more gratifying than getting a nice little win there. So, you know, I think it'll be a good game. I'm hoping it'll be a good game.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt we see both of them, just with Alexis and Ozil in the form they're in. The other thing I thought about is, you know, I could see Wenger potentially pushing Alexis higher up the pitch as the main striker, and then bringing in Jack or Iwobi behind. I mean, I think that limits your ability to score goals to some extent. So not sure I'd recommend that. You know, the rest of the lineup kind of picks itself. And I think United have some injury concerns with Matic and Fellaini. So it'll be interesting to see how they line up as well. You know, Lukaku's not exactly been in great form for them recently. You have a healthy Ibrahimovic now for them. You know, Pogba's healthy, I believe. So that'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's a tough one for me. If I was going to predict it right now, I have a feeling it might be one of those 0-0 games where if we don't score an early goal, I think, you know, United really bunkers down and plays on the counter, and then we try to break them down. And I have a feeling it might be that kind of game. So that's my predicted score. Which way would you lean with that?
I mean, my first want to ask, how is Lukaku even playing? How did a panel of three judges, so to speak, former referees or whatever have you, not deem that a kick out on that player twice? He did the same kick out back kick twice. So he should have had a 3-match retrospective ban, and they didn't deem it a kick out. And this is more than just Arsenal players or Arsenal fans and supporters complaining about this. This was like, I've seen Liverpool, City, I've seen them all out just because it's crazy. Like, he did kick out, like he should get a ban. It's the same thing when they don't retrospectively ban Spurs players for diving. Like, it's just ridiculous. So I think it's definitely probably going to be a 0-0. I'm kind of nervous to predict it. I'd like to go there and put on a clinic. I think it's either going to be one of two things, hopefully. I think they could either get a draw at home with a 0-0 if he comes to park the bus, but I'm hoping for like a 3-0 little pop from the Arsenal if they keep playing offensively strong, if Ozil plays. But without Lacazette, I don't know if all the goals will be there. So maybe a 1-0, I think, is on my average talk there. I think I'm going to go 1-0 Arsenal.
Okay, so I think I can see that happening. I think the one thing that makes me feel good about us in this type of game is that we look so much more defensively solid. And I think there's really something to be said for that. So, you know, the worries that I had about us being caught on the counterattack aren't necessarily there to the extent that they were before. So, you know, it's going to be tough. I mean, this is a big game for both teams. You know, if you manage to get 3 points here, you creep up on United and you know, they're in second place right now, and then you push Chelsea a little bit. Looking at the other team, you know, looking at the other games this weekend, pulling up the list here. So we've got Chelsea versus Newcastle, Stoke versus Swansea, Brighton versus Liverpool, Watford versus Tottenham, West Brom, Palace, Everton, Huddersfield. So, you know, not a whole lot of mouth-watering games. So this is really kind of the game of the weekend. So if you get a win here, I think you make a big, big statement, having already beaten Spurs and putting up a pretty respectable performance against Manchester City in the previous game, if we're being honest. So so we'll see what happens. But kind of to transition to something else, because actually I'm looking back at the last time we recorded, we really didn't get a chance to talk about the U.S. men's national team game against Portugal. And just as noteworthy as that was the appearance of one Bruce Arena at halftime on Fox. I don't know if you'd want to start with the game or do you want to start with Bruce Arena? Because we can go a whole bunch of different ways with this one.
The game can be talked about in a second. I mean, it was what I thought it was going to be. It was nothing special. Some young people showed some promise. But the Bruce Arena on the Fox thing is going to be a decent discussion because it's an abomination. I think it's almost a slap in the face back into the American soccer public, or maybe even more specifically, the snob, you know what I mean, that they consider the quote unquote snob. So it's I didn't like it one bit.
I'll start with the game, just give a quick summary. I mean, I thought there were some really promising players. I thought Danny Williams looked good. I mean, he's not young, obviously, but he should have been in the World Cup qualifying squad, no doubt about it in my mind. Weston McKennie, obviously, other than the goal, which was amazing, he looked really good, even not considering the goal. Tyler Adams, the New York Red Bulls player, I thought looked really good. Miazga and Brooks, really promising at times. And overall, it was probably something, you know, the goal we gave up was obviously a soft one, and I know Horvath probably feels pretty bad about that one. Hopefully it doesn't damage his confidence moving forward. But it was at least a good result to kind of start the positive momentum towards the next World Cup cycle. And I can't believe I'm saying that, but you know, the one thing that has kind of made me not happy, but at least encouraged, is how many people have expressed outrage about Bruce Arena being on that halftime show. I mean, it's been unanimous over the soccer world, how tone deaf it was and just the ridiculous lack of self-awareness that it showed. And I saw that Lawless was trying to defend it as, oh, well, it was just good television, you know. People wanted to see that. I mean, I'm going to speak for myself. I had no interest in hearing from Bruce Arena after we failed to qualify for the World Cup. I had no interest in hearing from him. He's an out-of-touch dinosaur. that does not have the best interests of U.S. soccer at heart. And you can tell that when he's saying things like, we don't need to improve. The one quote, I mean, it's hard to pick one, but the one thing that stood out to me when he said, there are no U.S., there are no talented players slipping through the cracks. That it and it goes back to something I said in the previous podcast. It's so ridiculously ignorant to think that no talented players are slipping through the cracks. You have to have such a lack of any sort of, you know, knowledge about the U.S. talent base to think that, because of the scope and the size of this country, of course there are players slipping through. And to be quite honest, it's mostly in minority communities that don't have access to the resources and the coaching that the rest of U.S. soccer does. So to say that no talent slipping through the cracks is completely, just burying your head in the sand as to the problems surrounding U.S. soccer. I mean, when you heard that, what did you think?
It takes you a while to process it, first of all, because it's unfathomable to even have that thought. Like, it's almost like, how selfish are you that you feel you know enough, right, about what's happening? Like, you have such a finger on the pulse of the soccer situation in the entire United States that you're confident enough you can make a statement like that. It's ignorant times a million. Like, I don't understand how this man, and what was Lawless's argument about that on Twitter too? Like, oh, like, how do you know if any fall through the cracks if you never find out who they are? And everybody's like, because they fall through the cracks. Like, and some people aren't even in the system, and those are people that they're talking about. You know what I mean? People don't have access to the way that these things are set up, because you have to have a bajillion dollars to play these games. And I'm being exaggerating there, but it's very expensive sport to have to play, and only certain people who are privileged are able to do it.
I think what Lala said was, name me a player who slipped through the cracks, and I mean, that just misses the mark as usual, but that's status quo for him. You can't name a right. player slipped through the crack because you don't know who they are. That's the whole point. You know, it's just remarkable to me. And of course, Fox Sports being Fox Sports, they didn't ask him any difficult questions. They basically sugarcoated everything. Yep. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said they were basically mocking U.S. soccer fans. They were, because they even, you know, they were talking about criticism that Bruce Arena got on Twitter, and then Bruce like looked at the phone and said like, oh, something about all the coaching experts on the phone or something to that effect. And, you know, it's basically like, oh, how dare you question me? I mean, this is the same guy who came in with all his false bravado about how he understands the American player and had all his MLS boys backing him. Coincidentally, all those MLS media folks went into hiding as soon as Bruce failed. But, fortunately, we're here to keep him accountable. And
I always will.
Yeah, so that, you know, and I've liked seeing people call them out on their shit, because I think it's deserved, honestly. But it reminded me of everything that is wrong with U.S. soccer. When you put the manager who failed to qualify is getting paid to be on television to then analyze the team he failed to qualify with. Mm-hmm. And then he said something about how Miazga and Brooks were going to be his pairing at the World Cup. Well, he never played them together. He rarely called in Matt Miazga. He said all this stuff about young players and this and that. Well, he never played any of the young players during his qualification. It was all about experience, you know, the experienced in CONCACAF. Like, well, a lot of good that did. I know I'm getting a little ranty, but it was one of those things that has exemplified the need for change in U.S. soccer. And I know down the line we want to get more into the presidential stuff, but for me, I mean, this U.S. soccer presidential race is just screaming out for Eric Winald, just someone with a clue about the global game.
It might be the two C's. It might be C squared. Someone with a clue and someone who actually has been consistent. This man has been saying these things in some shape, way, or form, both on Twitter and even on Fox at times. Because back when, you know, Arsenal were in the Champions League and you really had to listen to these idiots on here when Fox Soccer actually had a channel, okay? And you didn't have to pay $130 to go to Fox Soccer to go. Heads up to NBC there on doing sports gold, because, you know, if they raise the price there, they're going to end up having trouble losing viewership, because that's what happened to Fox. They spent so much money getting money on that. They cut money paying for the view, you know, the actual feed for the league, and only got so many games per week. And then people stopped watching it. I mean, they're lucky that the following is as big as it is right now. But as for Ronaldo, he's consistent. He you know, doesn't give very solid answers on Twitter and things, but if you ever listen to him talk and hear what he has to say about things, he knows what the issues are, and he knows at least what works. Like, he's not an idiot to it. He's just kind of arrogant at times in a way. And I mean, you know, whatever. I don't know. I kind of, you know, everybody thought he was like a crazy candidate at first, but I think when they saw all these other people join in the race, they were like, all right, you know, this guy is definitely something that could be worked upon and at least start something to work upon, you know?
Yeah, I think he's someone who at least has seen the need for change. I think a lot of the other candidates are either not mainstream enough to really attract any attention or too attached to the status quo, Kyle Martino. So, yeah. You know, I mean, it's pretty clear who wants change and who doesn't, and who benefits from the change and who benefits from the status quo staying in place. But, you know, that's certainly a discussion for another day. It, you know, I think just, I hope if you're a U.S. soccer fan that you're actually listening to what's being said, listen to these presidential forums that they're having, read what these candidates think. Not that we can vote, but I think as a U.S. soccer community, we need to be educated about what's going on. So we'll certainly follow that as it progresses. And, you know, obviously a big stretch for the Arsenal coming up, a lot of big games. So we'll certainly have a lot to talk about moving forward. But Bill, any final thoughts before I throw out the Twitter handles?
Nothing really. It's exciting to see Arsenal playing well and scoring some goals and, you know, looking like it's some fun football. The end of that, the second half of that Huddersfield game today was some nice free-flowing stuff. One-touch stuff. I think Ozil had, what, two goals and an assist, I think, with maybe four touches of the ball or something. I don't even know what the stat was. It might have been all one touch. So it's nice to see that. I'm hoping to see some more of that for this weekend. Always a tough game. But hoping for the best, like we were talking about before. As for the U.S. soccer stuff, that's, I think, a podcast series, like a mini cast series or something. I don't even know, because we could really talk about that for a long time. So looking forward to the Arsenal continuing the run, and love the holiday fixtures, man. Getting like four games in a week sometimes, it's so much fun.
Oh, yeah, my fiance is going to love it, because I'm sitting near the TV and she's going to wonder what the hell I'm doing with my life. But such is life as a football fan. You know it well. I know it well. But I'm going to throw out the Twitter handles. Bill, where can the folks find you if they want to interact with you on Twitter?
You can find me at AFCGoonerO.
And if you don't find him there, you can find him arguing with just about every single journalist. We call him, like we said, we call him the media assassin, but I'm going to give him a nicer name. I'm going to call him the media accountability man. You know, you keep these guys accountable, because a lot of these journalists with the narratives that they put out there that don't get questioned, sometimes you got to get questioned. Sometimes you got to get harsh with them.
Yeah. I work in the liability department.
That's how you keep journalists accountable. And that's ultimately how you hopefully change some of these narratives and the lazy analysis. But if you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at UFGoonerAJ. You can find the podcast at EuroSnobPod. And then you can find us on facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. If you want to find any of our previous episodes, check out our YouTube channel, EuroSnob Podcast. If you want to find us on Podomatic, find us at EuroSnobPod.podomatic.com. That's where you can find our old episodes or subscribe on iTunes. I've given you 15 different ways to find us. So if you can't find us at this point, no excuse. We also live streamed the video here. So if for some reason you want to see our faces, you can certainly do that. But Bill, it's been great having you on as usual, and hopefully we can get back to you all next week with after a win against United.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me again. It's always fun going over this stuff and talking the Arsenal, and hopefully we could talk next week about a big United victory, as you so mentioned.
Absolutely. So for Bill and myself, everyone have a great weekend. Hopefully we got Ian back next week, and yes. Let's do this again. We'll see you again real soon. Thanks.
See you guys.